on DAB Digital Radio, Digital TV, downloads and online.
This is 5 Live.
Hello and welcome to a surprise and bonus extra movie podcast. Willem Dafoe came into the studio to talk about his role in director Lars von Trier's controversial new film, which is called Antichrist. Mark Kermode is here early. Good afternoon.
Early?
Well, early.
It was the time I said I was going
to
be here.
Well, that's true, and he's in early because we're delighted to say Willem Dafoe is actually here and he's in the studio. Willem, how are you?
Good.
Said hello to Willem just a few moments ago during the news. I said, Mark will be with us shortly. You'll spot him because he thinks it's 1955. Yeah. And how accurate
did
was
that? Did you spot
that?
Me?
Pretty close.
Very good.
How would you describe the look of our good doctor here?
Is that how we're going to start?
Unfortunately, that's probably how we're going to continue, Willem, so get used to it. Welcome to Radio 5.
You're looking even more 1955 than normal.
I should confess, actually, that several years ago, I did try to look like you.
Oh, my God.
Because I went to see you in the movies, and I thought, okay, he looks really cool. I want to get... There was a point when you had a kind of, you know... So I did do for a little while, can I look like Willem Dafoe in the... But I don't...
Which Willem Dafoe were you trying to look like? The Willem Dafoe in...
You know, yes, it was... You know,
Last Temptation
I don't
of Christ?
Have, yeah, no, I wasn't going for the Last Temptation look, but I don't have the cheekbones for it. I have the hamster cheeks. You have the cheekbones. That's the thing.
So Antichrist is Willem's movie, which you may well have read about. Opens in cinemas on the 24th of July. And one of the... we have followers on Twitter. Do you Twitter at all?
I don't.
I think you should. Anyway. One of the people that follow Mark and me on Twitter said this morning, now look, Willem played Christ in The Last Temptation of Christ. Now he's the Antichrist. He should make his mind up. Which I thought you must be the only person I think who sort of fulfilled both roles. Anyway, just explain
well,
the
he's
title.
Not the, he's
I
the,
know.
Yeah, okay,
I know.
Fine,
I know. Yes,
Antichrist. It's a catchy title.
Okay, it could
there
be.
Is
anything.
No.
It could be.
Maybe it has something to do with Lars reading Nietzsche's Antichrist. Maybe it has to do with it being a catchy title. Maybe it has to do with Lars talks about the world that he makes in this movie is a world that's. A nature that's created by the devil rather than God. So a malevolent nature.
Right. So this is Eden gone mad.
That's right.
So explain who you are. You're not the Antichrist, as we've established already, unless we've missed that.
You're confusing that with The Omen, Simon. Yes. Totally different. Small kid. Okay.
Yes, the thing that confused me was the title of the film.
Yes.
Anyway, so Willem, just explain the story.
There's a couple. They're grieving after the death of their young son in an accident. He kind of pulls himself together. She remains in this terrible depression. He happens to be a therapist, and he's very frustrated that she can't be shaken out of this anxiety, this depression. And he decides to take her to a little retreat, their cabin in the woods, and try to heal her. And
her cabin
things
in the woods
don't go so
crucially,
well.
Crucially, she had time on her own with the child who has died, which is very
That's
important.
That's right. Yeah. Very crucial. I just didn't want to confuse things.
Oh, no, okay.
No, but you're right. That is very important.
Right. So people listening to that description will try and marry that film that you're talking about with the film that they have read about.
Right.
Which, as you know, people, when it went to Cannes, it got booed and got laughed at and got applause at the end as well, but it had a whole variety of reaction. And let's be upfront about it, genital mutilation is in there, scenes of how would you describe them, Mark? Torture.
I think you've pretty much hit the nail on the head with the first phrase. I don't think there's really any way you can go from there.
No, that's true.
You've gone up to 11 in terms of the description already.
Given that it involves some of that. I mean, a lot of the attention has focused on that, which you must have known, Willem, when you were involved in the movie. Have people got the wrong end of the stick or not? Well, even that sounds the wrong kind of phrase to be using.
You know, that's not what the movie is. Those are very extreme details in the movie that help kind of connect the audience with what these people are going through. We're not used to seeing these things in movies, at least not a movie like this that has content and isn't just a movie that means to titillate. So it's an uncomfortable feeling seeing some of these things. So everybody goes when they don't give a very, very thoughtful account of the movie. That's what they go to. But I think the movie is so much more than that. And I think those scenes are very important to make the other part, the body of the movie, stick.
So if that's not what the movie is about, you would say the movie is essentially about what?
It's
grief?
Yeah, it's a meditation on guilt, grief, how our mind deals with fear and where your mind goes to that dark place and you start to believe things that are beyond your experience. You tend to, you know, you catastrophize, you start to basically slip over the dark side. Mm.
And it's about misogyny, very, very openly about misogyny.
I don't agree.
You don't think it's about misogyny? I didn't say it's misogynist. I said it's about misogyny.
I think it deals with, you know, a certain kind of tension between the sexes, but I'm not sure it's about misogyny.
The Charlotte Gainsbourg character is doing a dissertation on genocide.
Right.
And the center of her
genocide
thesis...
Genocide being?
Well, the extermination of women. She's doing a thesis about the way in which women have been mistreated over the years, particularly by religion. And I don't want to talk beyond that, right, because actually I don't want to give any supplies. But I think one of the things it is about misogyny.
For you, fine. You know, I think a movie like this is going to mean different things,
sure,
to different people. It's that complex. It's that rich. And, okay, I can't say no. But that's not what occurs to me. Like the fact that she has that study, to me, is like a shorthand that she's a progressive, intellectual, feminist-leaning student. It's not specifically...
No, no, sure, sure.
Okay.
But I also think it's important... I mean, Lars von Trier is very interesting to me because I have a strange relationship with Lars von Trier's films. I hated Breaking the Waves. I got thrown out of The Idiots at Cannes for shouting at the screen in very bad French. I really liked Dogville. And I think that the key to understanding Lars for me is... Funny, we had Paul Bettany on the program talking about Dogville, is that... What he does is he takes an idea and he runs with it. And the mistake with von Trier is to believe anything he says, either on or off screen, is meant absolutely. I think he is an absolute prankster. I have to say, right at the beginning, I think that that Antichrist contains some of his best work. I mean, I think there are things in Antichrist that I really like. There are bits in Antichrist that I want to go, oh, Lars, for heaven's sake. But there are things in it.
Are they the bits where everyone else will be going?
Well, funnily enough, no.
I mean, I don't want to see that.
The interesting thing to say is because you brought it up, and quite rightly so, it's a film about ideas. It's not a film about physical torture. It's a film about ideas. And in the end, I think those things that happen are about those ideas. But I just think the important thing with von Trier is never to take his ideas at face value.
I think this movie is special. You have to give it a special criterion in his work. This is a much more personal film. It's a much more sincere film. I know what you're saying about him being a prankster. He plays with ideas. He plays with film language. He plays with different ways of telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is very close to him emotionally. And it comes from a very vulnerable place. So I don't think he's glib or playing with people. He's playing, you're right, he's playing with ideas. But it's all hung on a kind of poetry and a kind of dreamlike reality that... he knows so deeply. So my experience of working with him was here was a guy that was this was like a wonderful collaboration because he really needed us. He was very vulnerable, and this is very sincere material.
I mean, he says he wrote out of depression. I mean, a few years ago he was very depressed, and he wrote this as a form of therapy.
It's true. This is him, but he's very phobic. I mean, he talks about it freely, so we can, and that's part of it. But during the film, there was a tension that we might not finish the film. That's what kind of anxiety is, what kind of anxious state he was in sometimes. That does something really particular to the relationships between an actor and a director and creates a kind of commitment that's kind of extraordinary. So when anyone kind of says that he's, you know, a prankster or a jokester, as far as this, I don't buy it.
Well, I think that there is a difference in the way that for example, I think that the sincerity in the film comes from your performance from Charlotte Gainsbourg. I think those performances are completely heartfelt. And actually, I think they're one of the reasons why the movie works in certain places where you think it wouldn't. Because in fact, for the bulk of the film, I mean, the great substantial part of the running time, it is a film about a couple attempting to overcome grief. Now, the later moments, we haven't seen those things before, but obviously there are references to I Know Corrida. I mean, that's the kind of tradition that he's gesturing towards. But actually, for the great part of it, it is an emotional film about grief and loss. And I think the power of that comes from the performances. I don't think I'll ever get to the point that I will be able to take anything that von Trier does or says absolutely at face value, because I have had so much experience of him in the past, talking to actors who've worked with him, talking to people who he's driven completely mad. You know, when he was doing Dancer in the Dark and his leading lady just said it's emotional pornography, and then talking to, you know, Paul Bettany. But I think that there is a quality of the film in that first movement that I haven't seen in his other work, and And actually, that's why I think that that stuff is some of his best work. And I think in the latter section, in the stuff which has raised the controversy, I don't have a problem with it. I really genuinely don't have a problem with it, because although there are moments in it which you go, come on, Lars, it does make sense in and of the world of the film itself. Also, Lars said something very funny about it, which was that he said, I'm the best filmmaker in the world. I just don't know that God is the best God in the universe, which I think is a classic von Trier.
He's pretty entertaining.
We'll talk more with Willem Dafoe, and we'll discuss this movie and some very interesting ideas coming out of this. Mayo at bbc.co.uk 85058 if you want to join in. We'll update you on the Ashes in just a second. Nick with some travel first of all, then we're off to Cardiff. Pat and Alec, thank you. Update you every 15 minutes, ball by ball, on Five Live Sports Action. You follow that, Willem?
Wow. That language is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's like Shakespeare, isn't it?
Exactly.
From which I deduce you did not follow that.
No, but as Willem just said, you explain baseball to him.
Explain baseball?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't play baseball.
No, exactly. That's it.
It's rounders. It's rounders with a bit of showbiz attached. No?
No, not for me.
But essentially, it's rounders. It's just got a bigger crowd and you hit it harder.
Well, George Kahn used to do a whole great routine about how American football is all about invading other people's territory, when baseball is a game in which people just want to get home. And that's why he liked baseball.
So we're discussing Willem's new movie, which is Antichrist. It's the Lars von Trier film. It opens on July the 24th. And it's an 18 certificate, no surprise there. My eldest, son number one, is 18 today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it got me thinking, and I know what he's doing this afternoon. He's gone to see Bruno, the Sacha Baron Cohen mm-hmm. movie, which Mark will talk about after 3 o'clock. And it got me, I was just thinking, what is the recommendations from the whole of cinema in the last 30 years, you know, on your 18th birthday, okay, let's accept that most people might have seen an 18 before they're 18. What is the, artistically speaking, the best 18 certificate movie to see on your 18th birthday?
Well, it's obvious. And in fact,
okay. He's about to say The Exorcist because it's the only, that's his starting point. So.
No, but actually, that bears a relationship to the themes of Antichrist anyway, and that makes perfect sense. If you had to choose between Bruno and Antichrist, it's Antichrist.
Clearly?
Yeah.
Willem?
Sure. I haven't seen Bruno, but, you know, I'm a cheerleader.
What's the best
Antichrist
18 certificate movie that you've seen?
Well, they don't have 18 in America. They have R.
Okay.
Or NC-17.
All right. And so an NC-17, the top certificate, whatever it is. Looking back over, when you look back on the DVDs, you know, Die Hard, that was an 18 here. The first Terminator film, that was an 18. Now they're 12A, so our standards change. But what's the best NC-17?
I don't know. I'm not clever that way.
That's a very, very disappointing answer.
Body of evidence. There we go.
Chip in. I'm in England. You guys have a thing for that movie. It's true. Any place in the world, not really.
Okay. Here,
it comes up.
Well, I'm very glad to be the person who brought up that thorny issue, Willem.
Mayo at bbc.co.uk 85058. Just on the misogyny thing. Which often is around the Lars von Trier conversations that we've had. Nicole Kidman famously saying, why are you so evil to women? And in response to that, in one of the promotional interviews, Lars von Trier sort of defending himself, mm-hmm. and we take on board what Mark's saying, you know, about don't take anything mm-hmm. he says seriously, but he says, look, my mother was a dyed-in-the-wool women's libber. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty open about gender equality. Well, that's not a very profound statement, is it? How can you be open about gender equality? I mean, you wouldn't say I'm very open about racial equality, really, you know, whichever way you want to take it.
Both statements seem true and strung together. They seem fine. I have no problem with that. Thing about Lars is you got to remember these women characters are his characters. That's who he identifies with. It's interesting.
Well, it is definitely true in the case of Antichrist that it's that if people are looking at inverted commas pleasures in it, it's a masochistic film. It is a film in which the pain is not there for the audience to enjoy. It is a painful thing to watch. Mm. And actually, I think it is important that distinction is made when people are talking about the violence. People talk about, you know, relations, because obviously it does have a relationship to, you know, to violent horror movies, and Lars knows it does, and he's using that, you know, that grammar to some extent. But it is a film in which the pain that is inflicted, the pain is the pain that the audience feels. You don't look at it and go, oh, that's great. You go, oh, that's really tough. And it is a masochistic thing. I think one of the reasons why I like Antichrist and I completely can't stand Breaking the Waves is that I think you're right about his identification with the characters. It's just in the character in Breaking the Waves is this kind of infantile child woman who he seems to be fascinated by. And in the case of Antichrist, she is the strongest thing on screen. I mean, Charlotte Gainsbourg's performance is, you know, I'm not your performance isn't strong, but her character actually devours everything. Yeah. Yes.
She's fierce.
Yeah, but you just said that she's better than he is.
No. I said the character. The point about the film is the film is about her character and about her character's inability to come to terms with
and
their
her performance
guilt.
Is more powerful than
women's. No, I didn't say that. And no matter how many times I said, I'm not going to have said that.
You know how I deal with it? I just pretend it's all. You can't separate the two performances.
No.
But they're so dependent on each other.
Absolutely, but you can separate the two characters.
Reese in London, with this question, could you ask Willem whether he found von Trier to be a corrosive influence as a director? In other words, is he someone who seeks to stimulate reactions from a performer by employing divisive mind games?
In this case, no. I can imagine he's capable of that. But in this case, he needed us too much. And I think he does like to put actors off balance and also in jeopardy because he thinks that that's where the most interesting and truest impulses come from. And I'm kind of in accord with that. And if I'm willing to play that game, and I am in this case, then it goes fine. I think if you aren't playing that game and you resist it, then it could get into some crazy mind games.
You worked with him before.
I have.
On Mandalay. Why did you think, that's quite good, I want to come back and do some more?
You know, he's very bright. He's a great filmmaker. He's interesting. He's slightly perverse. I like being around him. I think he makes really interesting movies. Some I like better than others. He's got a great film culture. He's a kind man. He's got great poetry. And if you can cut through the kind of social banter and
what does that mean?
He plays with people because, you know, he's very much in his head, but he's a kind person.
It sounds like there might be easier people to work with.
Probably, but the easier people, let's face it, tend to not burn as hot, and I like to be around burning hot people.
Do you know, have you heard Paul Bettany's story about working with Lars von Trier?
I don't know, but I know Paul. I worked with Paul.
Okay, well, Paul told us, he came on the radio for us. I'm not saying
he's great. He's one of our favourites. Even in Wimbledon, we liked him.
Lovely man. He said, Paul's description of it, he said he got met at the airport by Lars von Trier, right? And Lars von said, hi, Paul. Okay. He drove, he said, I'm going to take you to the place. He drove him, he said, I'm going to stop at the service station. Lars von Trier bought a huge armful of adult magazines. Said, do you want any, Paul? Paul said, no, I'm fine. Thank you very much. Paul Bettany, Lars von Trier then drove to Paul's hotel room, dumped them down in Paul's hotel room, got Nicole Kidman into Paul's hotel room and said, oh, Nicole, have you seen Paul's incredible collection of... That was the first time they met.
That's my idea of a good gag.
Oh, well, there we go.
You know, the first time I worked with him, he said, they were already shooting. I came and he said, well, we'll talk about the character tomorrow. Tomorrow's a day off. I'll meet you early at 7 o'clock. And I said, okay. And it was like March in Sweden. And I met him. And he said, you like to swim? I said, yes. He said, get in the car. We drove about 10 minutes to this lake where the ice had just gone out. He took down his pants, stripped naked. I did too. We jumped in the water for about 3 seconds. It was enough to make your heart stop. We got out, dried off, got in the van, drove back. And I said, Lars, he said, that was a good conversation. And then I saw him on the set the next day.
Yeah, I don't want to work with people like that in general. That's more straightforward people.
You know? Hey, that's about as straightforward as it gets.
You can't imagine Ron Howard doing it, can you?
Michael Bay, do you think he'd do something?
No,
like that?
Michael Bay doesn't talk to the people, he just talks to the robots. Apparently, honestly, I know an actor who worked with Michael Bay who said that he did once ask Michael Bay how he should do it. Michael Bay went, do it like you did it before! And then went back to messing around with it, you know. He's not a person, person.
Just on the subject of directors, just got this question I quite like from Matthew Keeler. I watched Revolutionary Road yesterday and I thought this might be useful for when Mark reviews Away We Go. How to make a Sam Mendes film. Take several unhappy people, give them two clear definable choices between being happy or remaining unhappy. Make them pick the wrong option. 4, use a gentle piano score to soundtrack depression. 5, kill one or several unhappy people. And that's...
Except in Away We Go, in which he does none of them, because actually Away We Go is the positive side of Revolutionary Road. I mean, you know.
So we also need... You're in another film.
A few. Several films.
I know, but out now, Firefly's in the Garden.
Ah, okay.
Which is sort of simultaneous release.
I don't know, because I just came here for the press. Today.
So you don't know when Fireflies in the Garden is coming out?
I don't.
I think it's all coming out about the same time.
No, Fireflies in the Garden has been gone.
Yeah.
Well, that's very confusing, isn't it? How am I supposed to decide? Well, that's no good at all.
No, but, you know, to be honest, all the attention is on Antichrist because it has... I think the most interesting thing about it is it has become a talking point in a way that when you think about it, is effectively an art house movie about ideas. It is quite impressive just how much it has become the talking point that everyone's got to see. I've saw there's a piece in Time Out called "Will You Walk Out of Antichrist?" I mean, you know, how does an art house movie develop that sort of buzz? And you mentioned the thing about Cannes, people booing and people cheering. That's what happens at Cannes. I mean, people boo, people cheer, people do what I did. They stand up and swear at the screen in French and get thrown out onto the Croisette by the security guard. That's what Cannes like.
Have you ever booed a film, Willem?
No.
Have you ever walked out of a film?
When I was about 10 years old, Spy that came in from the cold.
Why did you walk out?
It was boring.
Oh.
I was a kid.
Have you never stormed out of a film?
Not really.
You've never done that thing in Cannes.
Look, I'm an optimist. You know, I'm always assuming it's going to get better.
What's the worst film you've ever seen?
Oh God!
Have you seen Transformers 2?
No.
Okay, that's the worst film you've ever seen.
Okay, well, thanks.
Amy in Nottingham. So you're talking about? We're just talking about 18 certificate films, NC-17, whatever. Amy says one of the fantastic R-rated films would have to be To Live and Die in L.A., mm-hmm. starring the fantastic Willem Dafoe,
and directed by the fantastic
Billy Friedkin. And the underrated William Peterson. So would that be a good place to start your 18 certificate movies, do you think?
That's a good one. I think that movie was interesting because it was one of the first movies to come out of the States where there were no good people in it. Yeah. And I remember it failed because of that.
Yeah, but it is now considered to be a classic.
Yeah.
Dave, as very finally, and in 30 seconds, when Dave, BA Honours, Community and Youth Studies, says, "Dear Proper Doctor and Improper Doctor, can you ask Willem about his upcoming vampire film, Daybreakers? I've seen the trailer, and it looks awesome."
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I hear it's really good. It was fun to do.
Well, you're
it's
in
got
it.
A good sense of humor. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. Making it was great. It's the Spierig brothers. It's Ethan Hawke, Sam Neill, Claudia Carvin. Really, really...
It's a good cast.
It's good.
Yeah. Is that what we see you in
that
next?
That comes out, I don't know here, maybe. I know in the States it's January, and I assume it would be about the same time.
You've got a romantic comedy with Matthew McConaughey somewhere. No? Have I got that wrong?
I think that one
Jennifer Aniston.
That one I don't have.
Mr. Mahogany was asking about you, and, you know.
Willem, thanks very much, Steve, for coming in.
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your time. Thanks very much indeed. And that, of course, was Willem Dafoe. Thanks for listening. More next week.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live